Perfect.
Have somebody who's had complaints.
Nice to see you.
How do they get resolved in a meeting?
Today's March 3rd, 2015. This is a joint committee on Ways and Means, subcommittee on natural resources. Today we're going to continue our public hearing on Senate Bill 5528, the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Do you have anything this morning? Okay, we'll turn it over to staff real quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're starting on page 23, community support and grants. Prior to that, there are a couple of new OLS postings. One is the Parks and Counties report to the legislature is directed by a budget note having to do with state parks and county parks declaration of cooperation. That's posted under today's date because Commissioner Labhart is here and we'll be talking about that. There's another new OLS posting, and it is a parks planning schematic, the second 100 years, and you also have it at your places, and that is posted under yesterday's date because the question about this was asked yesterday. That's all I have.
All right. Senator Hansel, do you have any questions? Just you and I running the show today, like normal.
I'm really impressed. If this was the result of a question that was asked yesterday and you've come up with that schematic answer, that's great.
We have this person called Chris Havel who is an amazing staff.
Good job.
All right. So we'll turn it over to you guys.
Okay. Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield and Senator Hansel and Ms. Gilbert. Hopefully others will be joining us soon or we didn't bore them too horribly bad yesterday. For the record, again, Lisa Van Lannen, Director at Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. I wanted to thank you for your attention and your engagement with yesterday's conversation. I know it's hard to hear all that information all at one time, but there were a couple things that I wanted to take a minute to clarify. And we'll talk a little bit from this document that we handed out. But Senator Hansel, I felt like I didn't really answer your question yesterday, and I'm not even exactly sure what the intent of the question was, so I wanted to clarify that a little bit this morning. You'll see in this, we actually put our real mission statement in there. Yesterday we were kind of paraphrasing and rolling it up. That's a conversation we've had internally of, you know, is our mission statement really clear to us? Is it really clear to external folks? And so although we're not necessarily the leading recreation provider, we feel that it is, we are the leaders in advocating recreational needs statewide at all levels. And that could be done by providing recreational access at state park sites and identifying statewide current and future recreation trends. And we do this lovely thing called the Statewide Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan. And we'll talk a little bit about that in the document. But there's some good work that's done there, but recreation is a big part of what we do. So I wanted to open that back up because I felt like I left you kind of hanging.
Thank you.
Okay. And then Representative Heck, thank you for coming back today and hearing some more. I wanted to address some of the comments and questions that you had yesterday as well so that this is in front of you and up here, and it's a little scattered, but I did want to thank you for those comments and challenge us a little bit more to bring back some information to talk about what we're currently doing and then some of the thoughts we're having about kind of evolving into our mission. Great. So on that left side there, you'll see kind of the doing now part. And on that doing now, there's things like on the inside, we do pilot projects, like the music video thing that you saw. We do natural play area. I'm not sure if you're familiar with our natural play area that we opened at Silver Falls to try to address the nature deficit disorder with younger children and getting them out into more of a natural play area. So there's things we're doing, but I think, you know, we haven't really talked about that or market those things that we do. We do a lot of visitor surveys and advisory groups, but those folks really are kind of like us. They're very familiar with our program, so it's kind of like asking ourselves if we're doing, you know, what we need to be doing. And that peer-to-peer, whether it's other national parks or state parks, local parks, so that stuff's kind of happening. And then the doing now outside piece that you'll see there in the blue is our planning efforts. And that's a little bit different than our normal users. If we're planning a new park or doing rulemaking, those folks that come to the table generally are more, we saw very clearly, like with the smoking on beaches, that it's not necessarily the folks that are there, it's more of the public thoughts. Grants are the same way. We hear from our local county providers, different feedback than we probably would. And we do a lot of statewide surveys, media and social media, whether it's newspapers or Facebook or some of the other social media avenues, we engage differently there than we probably would. So then if you look over on the thinking side, inside, Senator Hansel brought the point right up yesterday about understanding our brand and our mission. Is it really clear inside and outside? Do people know who we are and what we're about and what we do? The other thing I've done is I've challenged staff to really be thinking more innovatively and try to open them up to say, you know, who knows better than the folks on the front line? They hear every day what the customers want and what they need. And so if we're not asking them to be a little more innovative and think about how we could do things that would expand our services. And then that outside piece, this is kind of the stuff we're thinking. That's that we're the gateway to communities, and we don't talk about the opportunity that we provide to local communities and what tourism opportunities there are, what economic development opportunities, along with the recreational component. And then inclusiveness is really that, how are we going to engage with our current users and the users that we don't have yet? How are we going to get out there and say, how are we going to serve the unserved and get into the different communities of color and start asking folks, you know, what would you do if you could come to our parks? What is it that you'd want to see differently? Recognizing that the RV part of our parks is our bread and butter, right? I mean, we have to continue to do that, but we want to be mindful that we're also thinking about what the next set of users is and what the next revenue opportunity looks like. We talked a little bit about having a youth counselor or a youth commission. That's something that we're very seriously looking into. How do we ask those, the next set of Oregon explorers, what do you want to do in your parks? Concession contracts, we can start talking to vendors to say, what opportunities could we expand our expertise, and could we have partners that could come provide things that we're not really good at? And one of those could be marketing, for example. We see our state parks logo on many shirts and sweatshirts, but they have somebody else's name and brand on them. And we're like, why are they making money off of our brand? How can we do that? And maybe that's not us as state employees doing that. Maybe that's a vendor partnership. So that's just a little bit. So I just wanted to kind of clarify some of that. And then Senator Devlin's not in the room, but I did want to actually thank him and Senator Schrader before all of you were sitting here, and thank them for the park year. I don't want to sound like we're ungrateful for that opportunity, but we're asking this biennium and this biennium only for kind of a reset, for us to pause and say, we have this new system. We no longer have the state fair. It's a good opportunity for us to pause, reset, and say, how do we want to show up for the next, I'm going to say 100 years, but we'll be back next biennium with something more than what we're asking for today. So with that, I just wanted to see if you had any additional questions before I turned you over to MG to finish up our programs.
Sorry, general questions?
Absolutely. President Gumberg.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Co-Chairman, I apologize for being a little late this morning. I had an appointment that ran long upstairs. Director, you and I have talked before about credit card uses in our state parks. And the volume that you're using, whether it's for campsites, for concessions, for day use. And I've been very interested in the expenses that our agencies are incurring in the commissions and overhead for the use of those credit cards. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
All right, let me switch gears here. Co-Chair Rebuild and Representative Gomberg, thank you for the heads up you were going to ask, because I don't know that I could have given you the numbers you're asking me for. So throughout our state park system, we have 44 machines that we process credit cards through. That includes our reservation system, and then each of the parks has their own, what they call merchant IDs, which you're probably very familiar with. So each of those parks where we have day use machines, anybody abuse those, they take credit cards. So we do have 44 of those. They cost us approximately $11 a month for the machine lease. And then we process 406,000 credit card transactions, totaling 19 million in credit card sales.
I didn't hear that clearly. I apologize.
It's $19,953,000 in credit card sales across the state for a one-year business cycle. And our effective rate, when you're looking at what our merchant transaction rate looks like, it's about 1.5 is the average. Some of them are higher and lower. And then there's anywhere from a 7 to 19 cent transaction fee on top of that.
Quick follow-up. So if I'm making reservations to use a park, I can do that with a credit card, but I can't use PayPal under the current system. Is that correct?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Gomberg, PayPal is not accepted through U.S. Bank and the relationship we have with State Treasury.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Any questions? Senator
Dimbrough. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about relationships with like national tour organizations or, you know, groups from outside of Oregon that might focus on camping experiences, say for seniors or for targeted populations? Are there programs like that, you know, where, you know, the state parks are marketing to them for, you know, there's some sort of coordinated experience? You know, it just, it seems like that may be the wave of the future. Is that the wave of the present?
Chair Rayfield, Senator Denbro, so there are organizations that have some specific marketing goals around specific user groups, whether they're folks that are traveling from outside of the country or sort of elder hostel programs. We do a broad brush marketing approach to all groups. And one of the items that the director has challenged us with in terms of looking at our future marketing endeavors is how to target that more specifically. One of the challenges that we have when we're marketing to specific groups is the reservation system that we have is excellent because it allows for certainty in visitors when they're making a reservation, but it also is a 9-month calendar that fills up pretty quickly in some of our parks. So being able to offer either packages or discounts or some way to make sure that when we market to those folks, there's an experience that we can offer them is part of the challenge that we need to look at a little bit more seriously in terms of making sure that those groups have access to the parks if we're going to highlight the experience to them.
Yeah, I guess if I can follow up, I guess, you know, I'm thinking of that as a way to perhaps direct people to some of the less known parks, you know, that you would have a kind of itinerary, and that would expose them to parts of the state that otherwise they might not have thought of going to.
Chair Rayfield, Senator, that is one of the things that we're seeing out of the growth of the Seven Wonders commercials from Travel Oregon, and we have a very robust partnership with Travel Oregon at a number of our sites, like the Chrissy Field Welcome Center down in Curry County, as well as access to some of their marketing material and coordination on things like their rural tourism studios that they've done across the state over the last couple years. It is still going to be a challenge for us, and I think one that we'll need to approach carefully in terms of making sure that we have that experience to give those folks as we market that experience back to them.
Thanks. I do have another question. Absolutely. Completely unrelated. Representative Hack, did you have a kind of similar that following this thing?
No, go ahead.
You know, one of the projects that's out there that really interests me is the potential Salmonberry rail-to-trail project in Clatsop County. And, you know, I'm just wondering, how's that going? Parks, I assume, is involved in that. And if we could pull that off, that would be an incredible experience for so many Oregonians.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Denbro, we are going to pull that off. I don't want to steal the thunder because okay. I think Commissioner Labhart was going to talk about that when he's up here, but we're making great progress, and we'll be happy to let him come share his invited testimony, and we'll weigh in, and if you don't mind.
No, that's
perfect.
Great. Thank you.
We'll give you a full report.
Yeah, Representative Peck.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I'm just wondering, we're looking at some possible legislation that would allow for all of our schools to have outdoor school. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if you've had any thoughts or if there might be a way that we can connect our parks to that program, and if we can maybe work together to provide some of those services for our schools across our state.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
Chair Rayfield, Representative Heck, it is one of the things that we don't sell very well on our own system in terms of the number of education opportunities that we're currently offering. We had a very robust conversation about Senator Devlin's favorite park in the Portland metro area, where the Friends of Tryon Creek actually run school programs for kids that serve almost 5,000 kids a year. We're looking at other places that we do similar activities, like Shampooey State Park. We're currently engaged in a program with Eastern Oregon University to try to put an outdoor school experience light, if you will, at Cottonwood Canyon State Park to serve the students at Sherman, Wheeler, and Gillum counties. one of the challenges that we've had with that discussion is that most of our sites, while they have wonderful education opportunities, they don't really have the facilities to support an entire outdoor school experience for some of the metro areas or some of the larger schools. But we're certainly willing and ways to find our sites as locations for some of those educational opportunities, especially those that are closer to the larger urban areas that could potentially host day trips out to those parks, or in some cases bring rangers into the schools to provide some of that pre-context work before the kids go to an outdoor school experience.
Great, thank you.
And then actually I had a couple questions. What are the top five grossing and or profitable parks that you guys operate?
We may have to go back and get you the actual, because I think we would probably be guessing. We said, I mean, Fort Stevens, Silver Falls, yeah. But.
Chair Rayfield, generally our North Coast parks are some of the highest grossing parks, and then the parks that have larger campgrounds, Eastside, Cove Palisades, Prineville Reservoir, those sort of parks that have a lot of facility offerings to them generally have a higher return on investment. Across the system, however, most of our visitors are subsidized with either some return of the user fees from other parks to across the system to even that out, or with the lottery funds.
And does popularity of a park necessarily equate to profitability of a park?
Chair Rayfield, not necessarily. So depending on the amount of infrastructure at a park and the visitation, Silver Falls, I think, is a very good example of a very popular park that's close to the large urban area, has a very large infrastructure that goes with the park that is aging. And so when we're looking at return on investment from each individual visitor, which are mostly day use, we wind up subsidizing those visitors to the tune of about a dollar a visitor to make sure that we can recoup the cost for each of those visits and try to invest something back into those aging systems. Remember, Silver Falls is one of the older facilities that we have, and so we've got a lot of those concerns that I talked about yesterday in terms of sewer systems, electrical systems, historic structures that require a little bit extra in terms of being able to maintain them effectively.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, with that, I think we'll go back to page 23 on your actual presentation and get back into the agency overview.
Representative Rayfield, members of the committee, my name is M.G. Devereaux, Deputy Director for the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, just for the record, and we're following along on section F1, talking about the community and grant, community support and grants programs for the agency. This program has a lot of external facing options for the department, really focuses on supporting outside groups, as Director Van Lannen talked about, in terms of our support for local, county, and other recreation providers in leading the information about emerging recreation trends, as well as providing various funds of resources for their development of their park systems. We have grants and community support both on the recreation and the heritage service levels. If you'll remember, we have the State Historic Preservation Office and the Heritage Division as part of our department. When we take that responsibility of making sure that communities have opportunities to preserve the unique heritage of Oregon inside each of those communities very seriously. We use both matching grants and expertise to provide aid to those different localities. We have experts on the heritage side that can give folks information about different programs available for heritage preservation and or how to navigate through sometimes the complex permitting process for archaeological or heritage clearance when it comes to dealing with the historic property. As well as on the recreation side, we have experts that have individual expertise in trails development or trail design, ATV use, other types of recreation development that allow those folks to have some better understanding about when they're competing for grant programs, what the requirements of the grant might be, and what some of the best practices in the field might be. We aid a wide variety of Oregon property owners, local governments and organizations, and land managers to help them navigate through the various programs as well as the laws and restrictions that may come with the grant programs that go for those specific local park and recreation services and improvements to historic districts. And some of those may be including matching funds for special Oregon needs, like the $750,000 that was came from the local government grant program that linked the Salem Riverfront Park to Minto Brown Island to also improve other historic improvements around historic sites and museums. This really is only one of example out of 100 of communities across the state who improve their recreation facilities or improve their heritage preservation through the 12 grant programs that we manage through the state park system. And some of the recreation side is largely guided by what Director Van Lannen referred to earlier as the statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan. This is a planning effort that's required to receive land and water conservation funds from the federal government, and really is a five-year cycle to engage local recreation providers and their users to determine what emerging and current recreation trends are so that when the land and water conservation funds are distributed to through a grant program, there's a good sense that they're going to active needs and preparing for the future. We're proud to say that our statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan is one of the best in the country. In fact, we were awarded a special merit award from the Society of Outdoor Recreation Planners this last year for the work that we did on the public engagement and the work that went into producing the SCORP document. The SCORP document is also one that the local providers rely on heavily as they start to create their master plans for their park and recreation facilities, as well as start to identify some of those emerging trends inside of the grant programs. There are several issues that this program has identified. Certainly, the recreation and heritage grants programs, as designed to help communities and other partners to improve parks and outdoor recreation facilities and heritage offerings around the state. We want to make that process as easy as possible. We've tried to get as many of the grant applications online as possible, as well as streamlining some of the requirements for presentations to minimize travel from some of the local communities that have to present for these funds, and giving our staff technical expertise to the local communities to ensure that they have the most up-to-date information about the grant programs. We also manage the ATV program from the safety side and the grant side of the state, which is part of the refunded gas tax. When folks fill up their ATV, they are paying the gas tax for the fuel that goes into the ATV, but since it's not being used on the highway, that money goes into a fund that we manage for grants for improvement of various ATV facilities, as well as law enforcement support to many counties and other land managers across the state to ensure that those riding areas are safe and well-maintained. Some of the other programs that we manage in this section from the heritage side, we are looking at improving the tracking and the impact of the economic benefits from some of those heritage programs. We often know that when a facility in a main street or in a downtown area has a historic quality to it and receives funding to be improved, that has an economic effect to the rest of the community that speaks to the economic vitality and the resiliency of that community. We're going to ask staff to invest time and money to improve the internal record keeping of some of these programs. Specifically, the Land and Water Conservation Program is a very long historied program that has a very complex set of rules that put a lot of requirements upon a piece of property after that federal funding is invested. And some of those records from the early days of the program need to be updated and maps updated. So not only for our properties that have Land and Water Conservation Fund invested into them, but other local properties who have that understand the restrictions that are placed on top of a property when land and water money is invested into that property. The next program area that I'll talk about really is our unsung hero of the department, which is our central services. Many folks simply gloss over central services as the cost of doing business, but our central services program, which provides budget administrative support for accounting, contract administration, and information technology, as well as our reservation system, is one of the unsung heroes of the department. Without the dedication of the staff involved in making sure that our administrative functions are upheld to the highest standard of both accounting and other general practices, we wouldn't be able to deliver the service that we do at the field level. Consequently, our program has been awarded for the last 8 years from the state financial officer for a Gold Star Award in our accounting practices, and we have not had significant audit findings or any audit findings this last year, which gives our staff a lot of pride in the work that they're doing around this section. The budget for this section includes $18.9 million for administrative services, again going to the accounting, payroll, contract procurement, and information services, and the $6.6 million to business services, which includes our reservation system. We maintain a call center in the Portland area currently that handles all of the calls that come in for those reservations and an information center for folks that may have a question about the park they're going to or would like to plan a vacation and don't quite understand what the offerings that may be around them. Having local folks staff that call center is very important to us as our employees. They have a wide variety of knowledge about the offerings that we have. They've been to a lot of our parks, and so they can answer good questions from a knowledgeable standpoint about what we offer. As well as that unit provides us additional business support with inside the department, helping us on a certain administrative tasks or inventory management for some of our brochures, our uniforms, our volunteer supplies. So they provide us a sort of a back-of-the-house support from that standpoint. The final category in this budget item is debt service, which is currently listed at $2.6 million in lottery funds. Part of those are for repayment of debt that was accrued for the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center prior to it being handed over to us for operation, and something that we've agreed to continue to have on our books, even though they're setting forward as their own organization. And then some of the debt service for the Willamette Falls Legacy Project, which was approved in our budget last biennium.
Mr. Devereaux, I had a quick question. When you're looking at the reservation costs of the $6.6 million, when you're looking at a park and looking at its profitability, do you take the administrative costs, or more specifically, do you take the reservation costs and allocate that per park and when determining, you know, how much are we subsidizing a park or how much are we profiting from a park?
Chair Rayfield, most of our costs associated with sort of the profitability relate to the direct services, those rangers and facilities at a park. We aggregate the administrative cost across a percentage for those visitors simply because each park has a little bit of a different administrative need. And while we have tried to capture very discreetly what those numbers are, because of the range of administrative support that happens at a park level and then at the headquarters level, an exact number is a little bit difficult to pin down precisely.
But you do give a pro rata share of the administrative cost to the various parks when you're, like, say, doing an income statement when looking at a given park?
Chair Rayfield, the only reason I'm hesitating is our calculations for return on profitability are a little bit different than you might find in a business accounting system. So we don't necessarily generate a specific income statement for or a profit and loss statement for each individual park. There are a couple reasons for that. One, the state accounting and finance system is different than, say, a statement that you might get in the business environment. But our cost centers are also a little bit larger. We usually budget down to the a park or a management unit level, and so that may have one large park and several smaller ancillary day use park or waysides attached to those cost centers. So breaking that down to each and individual facility location in an account balance sheet would probably be a little bit more difficult than we could actually capture the precise staff costs for those specific locations. What we've tried to do in those locations is budget that out based on an hourly work breakdown. We use a system that we call the maintenance management program based on a national system of identifying what routine maintenance tasks are required for a facility depending on the nature of the hard infrastructure that's at that park. And from that basis, use what the hourly total to complete those tasks would be as sort of the basis of that profitability from comparing it to the actual money that comes directly to that revenue source.
So while you may not be doing it in a traditional business sense and looking by on a park-by-park basis, you're looking at the parks allocating the administrative costs to determine their profitability and just in a different method. Is that?
Chair Rayfield, that's correct. It's just that the scale that we're doing that is not necessarily typical to what you might find from a business venture that has multiple locations. We try to aggregate that to the decision unit that makes the most sense from a budgeting standpoint.
Okay, that makes sense. So you're doing it at a little bit lower level.
Much higher level.
How many of those decision units do you have when you're looking at that?
Chair Rayfield, we have 17 management units across the state. That number doesn't sound quite right to me, but we'll get you the precise number afterwards. But about that many through the state. We have three regions, and each of those regions have sub-units in them that we call management units, and then the parks are broken down into there.
Okay. And do you also look, and you're looking at kind of the, or do you go down as far as the management units and looking at the profitability of that? How far do you go down when you're looking at, you know, whether a park is, you know, cracking its nut, if you will?
We try to go down, Chair Rayfield, we try to go down to the park level. It becomes very clear to us that outside of those parks that I mentioned on the North Coast and some of those larger parks, majority of the parks are not income positive.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So the costs that are associated and the issues that are associated with this program level are really related to current and emerging federal regulations, especially those related to privacy and data security. I think we're all aware of incidents in the news where data security has been compromised, and since we do deal with a number of items that have personal information or financial information, we try to make sure that we are up to date on those compliance issues, and that drives some of the costs for replacing technology that might be outdated or ensuring that our practices are up to speed. I do want to touch briefly on the debt service, because there is sort of two elements of that we want to make sure that the committee understands. The first of those is that the debt service that's related to the Willamette Falls Legacy Project, which is about $900,000 in the biennium, is from non-dedicated lottery funds, not from the Measure 76 lottery funds. However, the debt service that we acquired from the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center will remain in our budget, even though they are transferring out of our organization. That was part of the discussion about setting them up as a public corporation, because we wanted to sort of have them have a clean balance sheet to move forward. So carrying that debt service into 2018 will be part of our responsibility as part of that transfer. Central Services also handles all of the agency's state government charges, which total currently about $5.7 million, and those cover the insurance assessments and other charges required of state agencies for the services that we use from the Department of Administrative Services. So these four program areas, the direct services, the park development, central services, and community grants are the four areas of primary operation of the department. If there are no questions about these, I will turn these back to.
I have a question.
Yes, Senator Hansel.
You'd referred to it and probably should have asked the question at the time, but on slide 26, you were talking about helping locals on the land and water grants, which is, I believe, a federal program. And I know at one time those grants were almost, I mean, it was ad infinitum. Once you accepted the grant, then you were locked into that status forever. Is that still the case?
Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, that is the case, and that was really what I was referring to in terms of the administrative cleanup. The grant money from Land and Water Conservation comes from the offshore oil lease program, that a portion of those offshore oil leases come back to the federal government and then are distributed through some of the land management agencies at the federal level, but each state gets a small portion of those if they're reauthorized from the federal government. The purpose of those grants is to ensure that property or facilities that are developed using that money essentially stay in recreational use in perpetuity for those lands. One of the challenges that we've seen is that when the money comes in, it's best to identify very specifically where that money went to in a project so that there's a clear boundary. In the early parts of the program, however, there was simply just a notation that land and water conservation funds were used for that property. So we have a number of properties that have what we call a 6F designation. That's the section in the Federal Register that speaks to the in perpetuity, that we need to go back and make sure that the map that was submitted to the National Park System, who oversees that program, matches the map that we have for boundaries, and that as we accept new responsibilities from that program, if the funds are reauthorized, that we're very clear about where that money goes into the system so that we aren't artificially limiting ourselves for future development, and if there are additional developments that we want to use on the property, they are inside that designation from the National Park Service.
So I'm just, you know, a school builds a recreational facility like a tennis court. 20 years from now, they want to put a building on it. They've lost track that it was land and water that bought it. They tear it out, put a building on it. What happens? I know that, and I know for a fact that happens.
Yes,
it
happens. It does. And so we want to be in the position of helping those communities when they get to that decision, identify that up front. There is a process that you can work through with the National Park Service to either change the designation to work through some of those issues and have them recognize that it's an allowable change, or there are replacements that you can use as additional property to take that piece out and another one happen. It's much more difficult to do that after the fact than it is to try to be proactive as that project moves forward.
Okay, we're on the final stretch, I promise. Good questions, though. Thank you. So Director's Office is the next program that we're going to talk about, and Director's Office is responsible for executive leadership, the proper functioning of various boards and commissions that we have within the agency, and then overall evaluation of internal auditing and quality performance in the agency. So that lies with us. And then we have essential agency communications that also comes through this particular.
I had a question. Is that traditional hiking wear that you in the background?
That's a let's meet a reporter for a conversation, and it was like, well, for here we're hiking.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Yeah, I'm not known for traditional, actually.
Representative Gomberg.
Good eye, Mr. Co-Chair. Director, regarding your commission, am I correct that you have one vacancy now and another one expiring in June?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Gomberg, you are, and we hope to have those, bless you, we hope to have... We hope to have those seats filled as quickly as we are allowed to do that. I think we're looking at maybe April or May before you guys all leave. We hope to have both of those seats filled.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Okay. Bless you. So the Director's Office Commission budget, that's about a $1.4 million budget, and that's the supplies and strategic direction for the operations and programs for the agency. Our commission meets about five times a year. We do travel throughout the state so that way we can get into these communities that we are supporting, see some of the projects that we've had and the impact we've had, and meet our local partners and engage our commission so they understand, have a greater understanding of what we do on the ground. There's about $238,000 in this budget for our agency improvement, which includes our internal audit and quality assurance functions, which that does like an annual risk assessment, any management reviews, and then our required internal audits that need to be conducted. Communications and research, that's about a $3.1 million budget. and that manages all of our media marketing, public communications, conducts all of our basic customer service surveys and market research, coordinates our key policies, makes us these beautiful charts that you get to see today, and produces all of our rules and rulemaking processes. And then human resources, although the budget is not in this particular summary cross-reference, that is actually in the director's office. So human resources is a tool that is right there at the director's fingertips to make sure that we're hiring and retaining and attracting all the right employees and making sure that we're providing great services for our staff. And then I'd like to kind of step back here and then recap some of the stuff we've talked about and wrap up, because I think Ms. Pearson and Commissioner Labhart want to have some time with you as well. So we've talked a lot the last couple days about funding. Since losing the regular gas tax funding back in the 80s and general fund in the 90s, we sometimes struggle to find adequate and stable funding to satisfy Oregonians' demand for accessible outdoor recreation. Lottery funding has helped, but not resolved the need, and we're not, you know, we recognize that that's not going to be the answer long term. It's basically flat. RV funds have been trending down for more than a decade, and recent reallocations have reduced our share of those funds as well. We've responded drastically by reducing the acquisitions to less than 30% of this budget, as we've talked about. We're going to hold the line on visitor fees for now and dedicate funds to operate, maintain, and improve our existing parks. So we want to be really clear that what our goal here is by making these reductions, is that we don't have an impact on the front line. We don't want that experience to change while we try to reset and figure out how we want to show up for the future. Tens of millions of dollars have been spent on programs added to the agency list of responsibility since 1998, when voters passed and approved the lottery funding. Although there's no way to undo that spending, and some of it, we're very grateful to have been able to have that opportunity, but it is possible for this and the future legislatures to prevent future reductions in our state park funding and making sure that the priorities align with who we are and what we do. And then other park systems, city, county, special districts, they need our support. We need to figure out how we can actually help them determine how we're going to provide statewide recreational opportunities and the economic development opportunities that a state park system can have to be bringing stable futures to our local economies. And so finally, to do that, we must control our costs by improving our efficiencies and reducing our acquisitions to the smallest number of key projects. You heard us talk a little bit about the Belts property. It's a property that our commission has been interested in for nearly three decades, but it's a very small development and a light footprint, so we can still be adding and acquiring priorities to the system without significant investments. This isn't going to be easy to control our costs and step back. Every program has its supporters, as I think each one of you represented yesterday. The park system plan, which is in the appendix 4, is a good gateway for us to start having and outlining this approach that we're going to take. We also need to provide value by changing the way we protect special places and provide great experiences to keep pace with the changes in demographics, public needs, and wants. Even more, we need to figure out how to earn more so we can actually serve more. Serve more by studying who we are now as a recreation and heritage provider, who Oregon is, and finding ways to bridge that gap are going to be very important for us. This kind of introspection will involve help from outside parties like the National Park System, other recreation providers, other state agencies. You're going to hear as they come in, they're facing the same challenges and opportunities we are. We need to figure out how we can partner and work with the folks who are already working on this topic and bring some new ideas to the table. The result of this will be improved revenue. We hope to be back to you next biennium with some great solutions rather than asking you to figure out how to solve our problems. We hope to come to you to figure out how we're going to protect our special places going into the future, continue to deliver great, if not even better, experiences, and do that for as long as possible. It's time to grow recreation and heritage services that match Oregon and how it's changed in the last 25 years. So I welcome your partnership and your assistance and any insights you may have. And with that, I'm going to turn it back to you for questions, and we'll go to whoever's going to be next.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. I appreciate the presentation. I really appreciate Chair Rayfield's questions about income statements and things, because you have a sort of a unique position, and there's several other agencies that do as well, of sort of being a profit center operating in an overall cost structure, you know, cost center for the state of Oregon. And we have some other, like I said, other agencies who do that as well. But particularly given that you are, you kind of user fee driven and you know, customer service component and things, you, even though you're not a business, we should look at having you be operating like one. And just from experience of running a school lunch program, same deal. You had to, couldn't take general fund dollars, had to be a profit center in a school district, which is really a cost center. So my question outside of that is, you know, what do we look like compared to other states for competitive, you know, opportunities for travel? So, you know, obviously we have 50 gorgeous states. We could argue Oregon's, you know, the most beautiful.
It is.
And people have, you know, an opportunity to sort of recreate anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my kids would like to go to Arkansas this summer and go dig for diamonds in their state park. I don't think we have anything like that here. You know, so obviously no sales tax is a draw. My in-laws RV and they tool around the country, so no sales tax is a draw for Oregon. High gas prices if you were not, you know, if you are in an RV, you don't get much miles to the gallon. So if that's your bread and butter, I have to imagine people look at where they're going to take their RV in the summer and go, is Oregon, you know, the best spot? Do you track it all, sort of where we're at with our neighbors north and south on I-5 in terms of RV fees for, you know, or and tent fees and some of the fees that we're charging people to use our state parks? Are we competitive with on the West Coast? Are we competitive, you know, nationally?
That's a co-chair right there.
A lot of questions. All wrapped into one question.
A lot of questions. So we'll do our best to summarize, and we may tag team a little bit on this. As you can tell, we both have a lot of passion for these questions. So, you know, from a user standpoint, we probably are the best value. In personally, actually hitting many of the state park systems and sister states around us, we are probably the least expensive. And we do hear from our users that a fee increase is not a horrible thing, especially when you get closer to the California border, probably. So recognizing that, you know, I don't want folks to go to Arkansas and Moab. I'd love to get people to come to Oregon. So that will be part of our conversations about how are we going to be drawing in folks to say, you know, what does Oregon offer and how do we get folks to do? We talk a little bit about Salmonberry. That will be one of the conversations we have there, is that not only could be a local enthusiast, that could be a national or maybe even international. I think Cycle Oregon said they had 11 countries represented at their week-long ride. It could be a great opportunity for an 86-mile destinational trail for folks to come in and to use something like that in Oregon. So we need to get ourselves on the map to start getting folks to want to come here and get those crazy Moab commercials off the radio and get people coming here to Oregon. So there's a lot more dialogue that needs to be happening, but we really are the best value in the Northwest for folks to be coming to visit. You may want to add more about the
Chair Rayfield, Representative Parrish. So there are two measures that we hold ourselves up to. We currently are the fourth highest in the nation in terms of visitors per acre, and we currently have the second highest attendance of any state park system in the nation. So we know that we are a destination of choice, and we also know that from the rates that are charged in Oregon, Washington, California, Idaho, we are right below the market average. So there's still a little bit of room for us to grow, and that was one of the reasons that we discontinued our Discovery Season rates. They were originally instituted about 10 years ago to try to attract campers to the shoulder season, and we quickly found out that it wasn't really making a difference in terms of attracting people. They were coming and said, you know, we're willing to pay a little bit higher fee in this off season to get a same level of service. Rates are one of the things that we have had a long conversation with this committee about over time. There was a period of about 10 years where we didn't ask for a fee increase. Some of that was because of the support that we were getting from the Measure 70, $66. It didn't feel right to ask for an additional fee increase after that. The reality, however, is that the lottery funds provide a subsidy, but not the entire cost for us to provide those services. So instead of trying to come to this committee with large rate increases that are difficult for the public to swallow, we were asked three budget cycles to come back with incremental smaller rate increases over time so that we were keeping pace with the cost of inflation. As you mentioned, we are an agency, and that puts us in a unique position of having a business demand that doesn't naturally match up with an agency demand in some places. There are probably opportunities that we could charge significantly higher for some of our sites because of the demand. We want to make sure that we maintain access to those sites for all levels of income and visitors that come to our system. But having flexibility on where those rates are it is probably some of the conversation that we may bring forward in the next cycle in terms of how do we respond to market conditions so that when we have a winter that kind of looks like summer right now, there are ways for us to be able to staff those campgrounds appropriately, open the campgrounds that we would traditionally close in the seasonal months, and have the ability to have a rate structure that captures some of those costs.
I have a couple and they have nothing to do with each other, so so forgive me for sort of bouncing around. I appreciate that, thank you. Recently in another committee we heard from the film director about some of their efforts on marketing to Oregon. Do you partner up real well with other organizations like that? I think they did a lot of promotion around the movie Wild and getting people here. How engaged were you in sort of cross-pollination between other agencies?
So, Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Parrish, thank you for asking that. It's something that you'll be having Slater Smith here tomorrow, the road session. So, Oregon Park and Recreation Department, Oregon Film Industry, and Travel Oregon partnered to do that. And then same thing with the film. We have many, many, many films that are filmed in state parks. So we partner very closely with Travel Oregon and the film industry. And so we're now, as Tim and I are both new into our roles, we're actually talking about how can we actually market that a little more and talk a little bit more about the value of those partnerships. And so you'll see a little of that tomorrow with Slater Smith here doing his video, and that is being hosted and partnered with Oregon Film and Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And I wanted to add to your last question, in 09-11 session we did some research out with users, and we can bring back the 2009 report about the rates. We can get that back over to you guys.
And one more follow-up. And then the other question, again, sort of hopping around, but how do we track in the state parks compared to the assets that are in Oregon that are federal park assets? So obviously Crater Lake, I don't think, is you all, and one of our key destinations. So, you know, what do you look like compared to the federal park system that's here in Oregon and the opportunities that are on our federal lands?
Representative Rayfield, Representative Parrish, the comparison for us is largely about the recreation opportunities that happen in our parks. In looking at those opportunities that are provided by either Bureau of Land Management, Forest Service, or National Parks, generally their facilities are much sparser. They're more rustic. We have the developed sites that have access to the Oregon coast in most cases. While we don't have Crater Lake as a facility, we certainly have Fort Stevens and Silver Falls as sort of those jewels of the Oregon State Park system. And those become attractions to some of the other facilities and communities that we have around the state. If I'm understand your question correctly, the facilities that we have more hard infrastructure than most of those other locations, whereas the dispersed camping that the Forest Service offers relies on a fire ring and a picnic table in some cases, where we have usually full developed sites with in some cases sewer, water, electrical, so we offer that higher level of amenity for that.
One last one.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the other question, you know, the Northwest being a regional destination, do you ever partner with Washington on anything in terms of, you know, reaching out to other states or Canada, or, you know, trying to get folks to look at Oregon or look at the Northwest as a region in terms of, you know, potential marketing benefit of marketing the two states together, cost savings for advertising and some of those types of costs?
Chair Rayfield, Representative Parrish, sort of in follow-up also to Senator Hansel's question, some of those marketing avenues that we go through, we have good relationships with travel magazines and other marketers across the Pacific Northwest, and we use those to highlight not only the jewel parks, but also to try to drive visitation to some of the lesser-used parks around the system. We have an active engagement with a couple of nonprofit organizations. You'll hear from one of them tomorrow, the Oregon Parks and Recreation Association, which is a coalition of local special district county providers in some cases, and they also have a strong relationship with Washington, where we try to have sort of a yearly check-in, how are things going. The Washington system is a good system. It's not Oregon's. So there are some differences that we have in terms of funding sources and the recreation opportunities that we're able to offer, especially with the Oregon coast, that Washington simply can't compete with us in some of those offerings. And they have their own set of funding challenges that make many of their facilities also seasonal, which gives us a competitive advantage in some locations.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Hansel and then Representative Gompert.
MJ, on slide 30, you were talking about some of the challenges and the expenses, and one of them was the inherited debt from the state fair. And you mentioned that you had that commitment through 2018. My question to you is, is the debt retired in 2013, or does your responsibility for it end there and it transfers back whatever's left to the state fair?
Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, the debt is retired in 2018.
Thank you.
Representative Gompert.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Director Van Landen, you know I'm a fan of the department and particularly a fan of your frontline personnel that are working with the public all the time. We've been talking today largely about heritage and about recreation and properly about profitability. But we haven't spoken quite as much about the relationship between our parks system and local communities, and particularly about local economies. You, of course, know I operate a business across the street from one of our most active state wayside parks, a park that is not profitable per se because there's no fees associated with using it, and yet it's intrinsically related to the profitability of my local community. And I would submit, of course, that that's true up and down the coast and throughout the state, but we're not seeing that come through clearly in your mission or your presentation. We did work on revising rules for Division 18 and 21 a couple of years ago. We built economic impact into the rulemaking process there, but I would invite you to talk a little bit about the role of parks and local economies.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Gomberg. So it may not have been highlighted on the sheet here. One of the areas that we're focusing in on one of our seven initiatives this year is the Gateway Community. And that is to start talking about how do we highlight, how do we partner more with the chambers, the local travel partners, local business partners, and actually have that dialogue to say, this is what we do for your community. We may be a state park and we may not charge a penny for that park, right? It's a profit loss, right? But the benefit to that community, it's invaluable. It's priceless. So those are great conversations we're having. We do that. Cottonwood Canyon would be another great example. The Seven Wonders, as we've been having that dialogue, Smith Rock, I mean, the city of Culver will tell you, I mean, there are people parked all the way down and around. And so it creates a greater conversation when we start marketing and having those dialogues. So we're going to need to partner very closely with those local providers and businesses to say, how can we highlight and expand and bring that in and make sure that we're not over tapping those communities and making sure that we're so it is very, very much on our radar and recognizing that. And that's also happening in the dialogues with the Declaration of Cooperation between us and the Association of Counties. And so we can start having that dialogue with the local recreation providers and the local county commissioners and local city councilors and those businesses to say, here's how we do partner and how can we do that better.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, so are you considering a kite flying fee here in the state?
Well, clearly, if you're benefiting from it.
There's a permitting process that allows kites to be flown on a beach.
All right. Are there any other questions? All right. With that, we'll turn it over to Lisa Pierce.
Okay,
Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Chief Financial Office of the Department of Administrative Services. And I am basically recapping the information briefly that you've heard yesterday and today. So the first slide that you'll see here reiterates that the revenue situation for the department has become a major problem. Lottery revenue growth has slowed, and other funds' revenue sharing changes have occurred. And this slide here actually shows the history of how we kind of got to where we are now. Blind games for the lottery came in 2003-05. It was also the bubble period. And so there was a great deal of increase in the lottery revenues up until the 2007-09 biennium. Then it fell back down for 2009-11, and it's been basically bouncing in that level of about $81 million, which essentially is where we were in 2005. So revenues are essentially the same as 2005, 10 years ago. Of course, the other issue is that we have added properties, and of course, there has been some minimal inflation making costs more expensive or a bigger draw on what revenue is produced. This next slide essentially captures the budget and revenue history, expenditures and revenue for the past 10 years. And the red line represents the expenditures. You will note that the, as I said just a second ago, the lottery funds are bouncing around now at about the same level as 2005-07. There have also been some changes, as you can see, in the OPRD share of recreational vehicle revenues, which is kind of, it's not showing up too well here, but yellowish color. It's gone down from 25.2 million in 2005-07 to 17.4 million for the upcoming biennium. And then just to point out real quickly, the miscellaneous other fund revenues, which is the almost second to from the top bar, have gone down considerably between the current biennium and the future biennium. A large part of that, of course, is the exit of the state fair from the agency's portfolio. And then there were the lottery bond proceeds that were one time only for Willamette Falls. And then the ODOT transfer has gone down slightly as well. The other piece to notice is that the agency appears to carry a hefty balance, but that actually involves the ATV grant funds, which are not fungible. And they also have to cover any potential costs from bargained labor costs. They also need to cover cash flow. This is a very seasonal business. And so during the period where they're actually preparing the parks to open for the peak season, they do have expenses where the user fees have not come in yet. Those usually come in the fall. And so they have to front or loan, essentially, within the agency lottery funds. And then on the back end, when the other funds comes in, they then need to, you know, essentially repay the lottery funds. But bottom line is you wind up having this significant, comparatively speaking, ending balance or balance to cover the seasonality and specified grants and trust and sinking funds, and that's about it. So next slide shows the adjustments, which actually is a different way of saying policy packages. And as the agency has noted, there have been several, actually virtually every major program was affected by some level of a revenue reduction package, which means that there wasn't sufficient revenue and so expenditures needed to be reduced. Then there's the housekeeping issue of removing the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, according to Senate Bill 7. There is a request to retain five positions for seasonal staff. Those positions were associated with the Oregon State Fair Program Unit, but the agency would like to retain those because they clearly have a need in the field for the flexibility to address issues as they come up on a pretty immediate basis. And then this agency, you have a question?
What kind of issues come up on an immediate basis?
I would say, Coach Rayfield and Representative Klein, it would be the kinds of things where you're prepping, you know, reopening facilities. And so the timing of all that will depend on the weather. It will depend on resources, services and supplies, essentially available at the time. If you're, you know, doing something that's significant that requires a piece of equipment, for example. Do you have any other examples?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Klein, are you referring to the positions or the ending balance?
Positions.
Okay, so the positions, there were 24 state fair positions that were essentially hired for like a 3-week window. And so those positions haven't been filled for at least one biennium. And so rather than phasing those out, we said we have about $131,000 we could dedicate towards those positions. It gives us like a 3 to 4 month, I think we've funded about 4 months, seasonal positions, so we could get those boots back on the ground. With these seasons changing, we aren't prepared to be able to start serving people in March or April. We've been prepared more like in May. So it gives us 6 seasonal staff to be able to hire at the front line to prepare restrooms, clean, bring in, you know, get the park ready, mow the grass, and get geared up. And what we've done is, because we've been doing the park a year and we've had the state fair and the state capitol and the Main Street program all came with no additional funding, we've actually not been providing the same level of service we need to on the front line. So these 5 seasonal staff positions will allow us that extra boots on the ground, if you will, to be focusing back on our direct services and get clearer and cleaner to our mission. It's $131,000 total for the 5 positions we are requesting to keep.
Please continue.
Okay, and then finally, because of the nature of its business, this agency frequently has grant funds that have essentially been allocated and encumbered, but the project wouldn't necessarily complete within the current biennium because of the seasonality, the weather, and so if you're here on this committee next time around, you'll see the same package requesting carryover grant funds. It's just an annual or biennial issue. And that brings us to any requests for technical adjustments. There was an adjustment to the Attorney General charges that was made in the Director's Office program, and that actually needs to from the Central Services Program to the Director's Office. And that concludes the recap of the agency's proposed budget.
Any questions?
Well, thank you very much. And at this point, we'll call up Commissioner Labhart from Tillamook County.
Labhart, and I serve as a Tillamook County Commissioner. I've been a County Commissioner for 11 years on the board there. I also serve on the Association of Oregon Counties Legislative Committee, and I also am on the Board of Directors for the Association of Oregon Counties. So I will be speaking not as just a Tillamook County Commissioner today, but a representative of the Association of Oregon Counties. And I'd particularly like to highlight my representatives here today, Representative Gomberg, good to see you, and fellow County Commissioner Mr. Hansel, good to see you both again. So in summary, If you don't listen to anything else I would say today, just listen to this point. In summary, the collaboration is good between the Association of Oregon Counties and continues to be under the leadership of your Parks Director, Lisa Van Lannen. Some of you may recall during the 2013 legislative session, there was a redistribution of RV registration fees, and I understand that's been talked about a little bit, between the state and the counties. Part of that direction that was given by you was that there should be an improved working relationship between the counties and OPRD. We developed, in collaboration, a declaration of cooperation through the Oregon Solutions process. There were also several budget notes prepared by the legislature, and I'm here to report that those budget notes are being implemented by your state agency. One budget note directed that there be a review of grant programs and revenue sources that address state and county parks infrastructure needs and develop an equitable sharing of resources. Another budget note directed that we both identify gaps in service provision and develop more efficient ways to deliver services, marketing, and recreation opportunities. We are creating these recreational coalitions around the state, consisting of staff from local government, recreation providers, and the Oregon County Parks Association, which is a representation of all the parks, county parks around the state. A final budget note directed that we identify parks that could be more efficiently managed and result in net savings if managed by another jurisdiction. Some of the specific examples I'd like to address before you today of how we've worked together to implement the state's direction. Association of Oregon Counties, Oregon Parks Association, and OPRD have held regional collaboration meetings around the state to start this dialogue on how to partner in managing the outdoor recreation of the state, outdoor rec around the state that could include operational functions, marketing, transfer of, and management of property. And some of you have already asked questions about some of these specific items. One was even held in my county, Tillamook County, with very positive results. The second round of these meetings will happen in 2015 around the state. In Crook County, Ocheco Lake in Crook County, after a 20-year management agreement at the request of Crook County, the state parks is transferring this property to Crook County for them to own, manage, and maintain. And in Linn County, Cascadia, OPRD is in the process of transferring Cascadia State Parks to Linn County. Bowers Rock, also in Linn County, is to look at the transfer of Bowers Rock to Linn County. We are exploring the possibility of transferring Tillamook County's Wayland Island County Park in Representative Gomberg's district to OPRD, which borders the state's Wayland Island, or vice versa. We were still in discussions about this. So we actually have a county park that is within feet of a state park. And so, yeah, we actually, the one way in and one way out. So we're looking at, you know, which is the best way to do that. It's probably not efficient for us to have two systems there. And then I heard earlier you talking about the Belts Farm acquisition. That was very controversial in our county for a lot of years. And some people might say, well, you got a farm, you're transferring farm property. It's not a farm. It is highest and best use was in recreation. It was a dairy farm 50 years ago, and it was not a dairy farm anymore. So it was a good transfer to state parks. It was a good decision for the state to acquire that. And our Board of Commissioners voted unanimously to support that. And I might say state parks did an exceptionally good job of coming out and talking to the community one-on-one and in public meetings to talk about this acquisition of this property. And so you would think it would be somewhat controversial, and it did not go that way at all. And it was because of the extra effort that state parks went to the effort to talk to the community, talk to the local jurisdictions, talk to the county officials about this, and so it went exceptionally well. Sharing resources with many recreational providers on a statewide recreation diversity and inclusion work, sharing professional services, reservations, planning, marketing, engineering with local recreation providers across the state. And Senator Denbrough, you asked a question about this, so I'd like to elaborate on this a little bit. The newest partnership that I am quite excited about is the Salmonberry Rails and Trails Project, and I sure wish Senator Johnson could be here today because she's also a champion of this. State Parks and ODF, Oregon Department of Forestry, took the lead in working with the Port of Tillamook Bay, which currently owns the railroad, Tillamook County, Washington County, local cities, Cycle Oregon, and others to develop a concept plan for building a trail from Banks to Tillamook over the Coast Range along the port's rail line. The concept plan is completed, it's well done, and thanks to the leadership and work of Lisa's staff and OPRD and the contractors. And MG played a significant role in helping to shepherd this forward, and he deserves a huge amount of credit for shepherding that forward. The governing organization has been agreed to. It was agreed to last week. It's going to be a 190 organization. It will have a representative from Tillamook County, a representative from Washington County, a representative from the Port of Tillamook Bay. I'm not going to capture OPRD and others. I can't remember all that's on there, but we've agreed to a leadership forum on that. Tillamook County and Washington County have said we're going to put some skin in the game. We have agreed. The chair, Andy Dyke, has given me in writing his agreement that we will fund between Tillamook County and Washington County 50% of the cost of a staffing of a position to help lead this implementation effort. So not only are we saying that we support the project, we're putting skin in the game, and as you well know, county's funding, well, maybe not Washington County, but Tillamook County's funding is really tight, but we're putting some skin in the game to help fund this. OPRD and ODF would fund the remaining 50% if you support it through the budget process. It's a multi-year effort to build this trail, but it has a lot of momentum behind it. There's been several magazines, national cycling magazines, that have already talked about this trail, and it isn't even built yet. If it was not for the park's leadership, we would not be where we are today, and I can't thank them enough for this project. It's a huge benefit. We're going to have a trail from essentially the Portland, Hillsboro metropolitan area over to the coast. And some of it's a multi-year effort. We all know that. It's going to take a long time to happen. But all of our seven mayors in the county are strong supporters of this. In fact, some of them are already developing plans of where it's going to be located. ODOT's been involved in helping to talk about where we can do it along Highway 101, because we've got to get these bicycles off of 101. It's a death trap, in particularly the area of Garibaldi. We've had people killed on Highway 101, and so we've got to get them off that highway and get them onto that railroad right away. So I'll be glad to answer questions on more on that if you wish. But we continue to build relationships to partner and strengthen the statewide recreation opportunities for generations to come. I thank you for your diligence in allowing me to come in on Tuesday to testify before you. I have a board meeting tomorrow. One of my commissioners is on vacation, and so we would have to cancel the board meeting if I wasn't able to come today. So I appreciate your diligence in allowing me to come, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you have.
Are there any questions for Commissioner Lamphart?
Representative Gomberg.
thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Always good to see Commissioner Labhart here at the Capitol, and an excellent voice for counties and exceptional advocate for Tillamook County. And Commissioner, I appreciated your comments on the Salmonberry Trail. I carried that bill on the House floor and happy to see it moving forward. My question for you is this, sir. Tillamook County, if I'm not mistaken, has one of the highest concentrations or highest numbers of county parks, particularly those that accept overnight stays. Talk to us a little about the cooperation that you may have with state parks, given that you're in kind of the same line of business, inviting people out to the coast and to spend the night in parks.
Yes, Chair Rayfield, Representative Gomberg, that's true. As the parks staff said, you know, a lot of the major use of park facilities is on the North Coast, and Tillamook and Clatsop County are on the North Coast. I don't know if you realize it or not, but counties have about 50% of the campsites statewide. State parks has about the other 50%. And Tillamook County is a large player in that. We have a park there called in Tillamook, just north of Tillamook, called Bar View. It has several hundred campsites, RV sites, full hookup sites, and it is a full year-round camping area. And it is direct correlation with state parks. When Cape Lookout fills up, it overflows into the county park. When our county park fills up during the salmon season, it overflows into Cape Lookout. So we have to partnership back and forth and to say, okay, you know, here this park's full, you can go over to here, and we trade ideas back and forth on how to do that. And then there's, I think, some great opportunities to expand the the intent of providing a quality camping site, and Wayland Island would be an example of that. We have a very small site there with just a few campgrounds, and yet there's an excellent trail opportunity with state parks right next door, and then just south of there is now the Belts Farm property. And then in between that is the U.S. Forest Service's campground called Sand Lake, which gets several thousand people on a weekend there with their ATVs. So how do we partner for folks that want to ride ATVs, folks that want to ride their horses, folks that want a solitude hiking experience, and people that just want to camp for the weekend? So how do we, as the U.S. Forest Service, the county and the state, partner in providing those facilities? And that's part of this discussion that we're having with the state parks folks, is how do we do a better job of providing those distinct uses out there?
Any other questions? Senator Hansel.
Just out of curiosity, where's Wayland Island that you were talking about? Where is that park?
Chair Rayfield, Wayland, Senator, oh my Lord, sorry, Senator Hansel. Wayland Island, how do I explain this? You know where Pacific City is?
Yeah.
There.
It's just north of Pacific City. You know where Tierra del Mar is? Yeah. Probably not. Well, okay. Pacific City is just north of Tierra del Mar. There's an area called Sand Lake.
Just south.
Okay, it's south of Cape Lookout and north of Pacific City.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Senator Dembro.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to, again, reiterate my thanks for the work that's going on with the Salmon Berry Trail. And, you know, this is something, it's a project and a vision, a dream, really, that was first presented to me back when I was a freshman, back in 2009. The head of the Board of Forestry at that time, who used to be, I think, the Parks Director previous to that, he had this vision that he shared with me. And I talked to a lot of people about it. As a freshman, I was really smacked down about it. You know, at that time, the county wasn't ready, the port wasn't ready, Senator Johnson wasn't ready, but people have really persevered with this, and, you know, I just want to thank the parks for, you know, staying with this, and, you know, I think it just has tremendous opportunities for economic development, certainly, but also just kind of psychologically bridging that gap between the metro area and the coast, where the coast range becomes not a barrier to get that you have to get over to get to the coast, but actually something that unites those regions. I think that it's a tremendous opportunity.
Chair Rayfield, Senator Dembro, you know, all good ideas take a while to cook.
That's right.
So your good idea took a little while to cook, and now it's got some really strong support.
I won't say it was my good idea, but it's such an attractive idea. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just mention for the Senator, we're planning a short film in the future with Reese Witherspoon hiking the Salmon Berry Trail. It's going to be called Wet.
We better get
all right, any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing and adjourn the meeting.